Today is the 12th of July 2011. I'm Karen Warren, a volunteer with the Little Ouse Headwaters Project, and today I'm talking with Margaret Phillip of Felneatham at her home. Hello, Margaret.
Hello, Karen.
Thank you very much for agreeing to be part of the project. It's lovely to be in your beautiful cottage. So can we start off by me asking you where you were born? And
Yes, I was born in Scotland, in Lanarkshire, and came to Felneatham as a baby when I was 6 months old, and lived in Mill Lane, first of all, Clover Cottage, what's now called Clover Cottage. Then it was a double dweller, with, of course, no water, no electricity. Well water, no electricity. And then we moved to Lodge Cottage, which is now called Elm Cottage. Again, well water, no electricity. And finally, into Lodge Farm, where my father was a cowman with the John Middleton Murray's pacifist community.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So what was your family name then?
Ferguson, yeah. My father was Dougald Ferguson, and he was at the farm until 1984 when he retired, yeah.
And did you have any brothers or sisters?
I've got a sister and a brother, yeah. Sister Jean, who's 2 years younger than me. I'm 68, she's 66, and my brother is much younger. I think he's 55 or 4. No, he's 54. As I say, he was much younger. My sister and I both were part of the community, so there were only four children in the community, and two girls and two boys. And so by the time my brother was born, the community had ended.
So which Felneatham families do you remember in particular?
I remember the Pawsies particularly, because my sister and I were very friendly with the Pawsey girls, three of them in particular. They lived in the council houses towards Hopton. In those days, there were several families with lots of children. The Pawseys had 10 children. The Rushes, Janet Wingfield was the youngest of the Rushes. No, she wasn't the youngest. There was another brother who was younger. There were eight of them. And there were several families of five or six. So
what year are we talking about, roughly,
this
here?
This would have been in the... Well, I went to school when I was four in 1947, I suppose. Yeah, I was not five, I was four. And the school closed about 54 or 5. I'm not quite sure exactly when. So the school was quite big. It had a big room and a little room. And because there were so many big families, there were a lot of children. And it was also an all-through, until the last couple of years, it was an all-through primary. In other words, from the age of four or five to 14, they left when I started. And you were in the little room until you were seven, and then in the big room for the last 7 years.
How many teachers were there?
Two. Miss Ward, who she was the infant teacher, and Mrs. Brown, who, she didn't live in the schoolhouse, I think. Well, she lived in it, I think, some of the time. I'm not quite sure where she lived. She was one of the few people who had a car in the village, anyway, and used to arrive on a Monday morning. And then latterly, there was only one teacher, and the school really rather deteriorated, partly because there were fewer children. Once they started taking away 11-year-olds, obviously that left.
So what do you remember about the school curriculum or hours of the day?
We did a lot of reading. I remember doing a lot of reading. I can't remember learning to read, but I just remember that I always could read. I think I read before I went to school. I suppose it was very traditional. We used slates, which sounds really Victorian, but we learnt to write on slates before we were allowed pencils. And I remember the high point of technology was when the teacher got a pencil sharpener that you had at your desk and you could turn it round with a handle. So, again, we had outside loos, and there was a great big bucket for drinking water in the summer with a dipper. So hygiene, you know, nobody thought about whether we ought to, I don't know, have different beakers, but we all had the same dipper.
Did you go home for lunch? Was it a full school day?
No, we had school dinners in the actual schoolhouse. They were cooked in. We had school dinners in the school. They were cooked in the schoolhouse by Dawn Sturgeon, who came from Hinderclay, I think. I can remember her. And we played. We had all the whole of the meadow, because none of those where Delia lives, none of those houses were there.
No.
The whole of that meadow was our playground, and because the old rectory was empty, we used to go in. Well, if we were being naughty, we'd go in there, because they had apple trees and things.
Oh, lovely. So how old were you when you left school then, Margaret?
Left the primary. Mm. I actually left when I was 9, because when Mrs. Brown left... No, Miss Ward left first, that's right, and because the numbers had dropped, they had another teacher called Miss Joles, and I'm afraid to say that the standards, I can't remember us doing it much work. Being Scottish, my parents were very keen on education, because although they were incredibly poor, they had had a very good education, as is common in Scotland. As was common, well, still is, but was at that time, where it wasn't as common in England. Certainly, if you were poor, you probably had a fairly bad time. So my mother researched, and she found that the St. Louis Convent in Bury would take me with very much reduced fees. So I went there for a year. They could only... No, it's when I was 10. I went there for the year before my 11+, because my mother... was sufficiently on the ball to realise that if I didn't pass the 11+, it was possibly curtains, you know, as it could be in those days. So I was there for a year, which I found quite fun, actually. It was quite amusing, because my mother came from the west of Scotland, where the Catholic and Protestant thing, as pertains in Northern Ireland, was just as rabid there, and my grandfather, in fact, was an Orangeman, and he was fairly rabid. So when he heard that my mother had sent me to a convent, he said, "You'll turn out wee peeps. There'll not be nothing but wee peeps." So that didn't go down too well in Scotland. But
so, how old were you when you left school completely?
Left school completely. I was 18. Mm-hmm. Yes, I left when I was 18. I went to the grammar school in Bury. It was an all-girls then. West Suffolk County Grammar School was its full title.
Did you have any work? Did you have a job like as a teenager, like many do today?
I certainly did. I worked all hours on the farm, yes. Mm. I used to milk the cows, not alone. I used to help my father milk the cows. I used to work, you know Tiddler Flatman. Mm. I used to work with him on the fields at harvest time particularly. And hedging and ditching. I think I did everything except... I used to hoe sugar beet, but I never did the actual pulling of the sugar beet. That was the worst job, but it was usually in November, December, and I was usually at school. So, yes, so that was my...
So did you have any time off school to work like that, or was that weekends?
No, although
holidays?
When I was at primary school in Thelnetham, it was still in the days where the children brought in... It was a blue card which permitted them to go, and there were different times of the year, different works. Obviously, I remember children getting time off to go and help with the potatoes, and I think they went and helped with harvest and even hay, I believe. But that was a kind of common. They were allowed out for that sort of thing.
So, did you grow your own food? You were saying that you had a childhood on a farm.
We didn't grow... We had a big vegetable garden, yes. Mm-hmm. The community, they had...
What sort of things did they grow?
They grew as many vegetables as you can think of, really. Potatoes, carrots, cabbage, you know, the works, all the salad. We had a good orchard. We had lots of chickens. So we had a lot of very healthy food, really.
How representative was that of the village as a whole? Did other villages have big gardens and grow their own food?
Yes, I think if you notice, all the council houses built at that time had big gardens, and that's because people actually did grow vegetables in them. And they used to mix flowers in with them. I always remember that, because people didn't have lawns then, because nobody had lawn mowers. So it was little paths, and vegetables and flowers were often mixed, which was pretty to look at, yeah.
So what sort of meals were fairly typical of your childhood time?
I wasn't that keen on food when I was a child. I was always wanting to be outside, but it was very, I suppose, typical of the time, meat and two veg and stodgy puddings, which I absolutely hated. My sister and I were always incredibly skinny, and because it was a community, there wasn't the concentration on us that you get in a nuclear family, so we were, I suppose, quite wild, because I don't remember my mother ever saying, you've got to eat that up. That came later, but certainly when we were in the community, I don't remember anyone fussing about whether we'd eaten or not.
How many meals a day would have been fairly typical in those times?
Everybody had breakfast, and the people who milked the cows had a cooked breakfast. I'm not sure if everybody had a cooked breakfast. I can't really remember that, but we all had porridge. bread and butter. I don't remember having toast. Sometimes a boiled egg. And the midday meal was at 12. That was common in the village, everywhere, at school, on the farm, I think everybody. That was the main meal, because, of course, everybody was then going out to work, hard physical work. And then I suppose people ate we ate at 5 at the farm.
So that was a tea kind of meal?
That was kind of a high tea. That you'd have something like, say, for example, you might have scrambled egg and beans, and then bread and butter and cakes, and cups of tea. So, yeah, so it was that. It had some protein in it, but it wasn't meat, generally not meat, occasionally maybe a sausage roll or so.
And how was food cooked in those days?
Well, we had, at the farm, we had an auger, a four-oven auger, so that was how we cooked. But people in the village, I'm not entirely sure, because we didn't go into each other's houses in the way that... we played a lot with other children, but we always waited outside their back doors. It was usually the back door as well, till they came out. We never went and played indoors with children. We played... If it rained, we played in the barns, or we got wet, but didn't go in the house. No.
So do you think they had electric cookers? And
No, they certainly didn't have electricity until 55 in Thalnethan.
Right.
So I think people had a sort of range. In fact, I've just remembered in the cottage where we lived, in Lodge Cottage, which is now Elm Cottage, we had an iron range. You know, so there was an open fire and there was an oven. Yeah, there was a sort of little oven. And people had bread ovens as well, which we use for baking. Like, you make a meat pudding in a bowl and put it in there, or steam that, actually.
Did most people make their own bread, or was there another way of getting bread?
People did, but there were a lot of bakers. There were about three... I don't remember them, but Tiddler will tell you that. There were about three bakers in Hopton. There was one when I do remember, but he stopped delivering when I was small. I don't know exactly when. So we had, there was a baker at Ixworth, I think, that used to deliver, and another one who I can't remember where. So Mum made bread at the farm, mostly.
And how were houses heated in those days? Or
weren't
they?
The range, there was usually in the kind of sitting room, best room, if you didn't tend to live in the kitchen, in the best room, the parlour, there'd be a fire, an open fire, coal or logs. And bedrooms certainly weren't heated. And in the farmhouse, which had huge, great, really big rooms, I can tell you it was very cold.
Was coal delivered?
Yes, mm-hmm. coal, and we had coke for the Arga. Mm-hmm. And we had a certain amount of coal and logs, wood fires. But it wasn't warm, but somehow or other you got used to it, didn't think of it particularly. And given that we didn't have tights, you know, little girls didn't wear tights, and little girls didn't wear trousers. And the boys wore short trousers until they left school. Our legs were, as I say, they ought to have been frozen, but we didn't notice. Yeah, it was weird.
So what sort of games did you children play then?
Oh, that was at Thelnetham. It was lovely. I mean, a lot of the games in that, you know, that children's game book, Peter and Iona Opie, a lot of those games are familiar. We played I Sent a Letter to My Love. Games involving lots of people, you know, and needing outdoors, intended. And, what's the time, Mr. Wolf? And I'm trying to think, hopscotch we played as well. And we did make up some games. We did a lot of hide and seek and catching games. What other games were there?
Did you have ball games?
Yes, all those sort of like juggling games. And skipping, we did a lot of skipping. And I wish I could remember half of the rhymes because we had so many rhymes. Yeah, lots of skipping, either with the long rope and individually.
So yeah. Several people skipping at once.
Yes, it was really over. Quite skillful, yes. Mm. Of course, we learnt from the bigger girls. It was quite segregated in a way. It wasn't forced to be, but it just was. Because girls tended to play with girls and boys played with boys. And we thought the boys were dirty and smelly and they thought we were soppy, so it was all fairly equal.
You mentioned that the houses were not there where the field is behind the school, which is now the village hall. How else do you notice that the village is different now in terms of buildings and vehicles to how it was then?
Well, there were so few cars. I remember once we'd heard that people collected car numbers, so my sister and I found some paper and a pencil and went to collect car numbers. Of course, we sat outside the farm and one car came by. No, I think in the village there were probably no more than maybe four cars. Jack Jones, who farmed at where Molly now is, had one. Richie Reeves, who was Molly's dad, had one. Ella Smith, who kind of acted like a taxi service, had one. As I say, very few.
So we're looking at the 1950s here, are
we? Yeah, still into the 50s, yes. So when we were playing, say, hopscotch, we played it in the road and without any fear of traffic because there wasn't any. And as far as buildings go, the down past the pub, all those bungalows there between the pub and the council houses, they didn't exist. That was a meadow. And also the old people's bungalows where Tiddler Flatman lives, that was another meadow.
Do you know when the council houses were built?
I think they were 20s or 30s. They were the Frogs Hall ones, I think, were new. Tiddler's family lived in them. You ought to talk to Tiddler, actually. You really ought to, because he would tell you. I know they moved in there about in the late 1920s. And I think they were quite new then. I've got that feeling that he said it was like, you know.
Right.
Of course, people couldn't believe their luck when they moved into them, because some of the houses that had been here were quite primitive, in a poor state of repair. They used to change hands for £25, the cottages, which is incredible. But, I mean, they needed a lot. They were damp, a lot of them, and scruffy.
So they were... A decision was taken to knock them down, was it?
No, it happened kind of very ad hoc. There was no... I can't remember...
No the policy house, decision as such?
No, not that I know of. The only one I can remember that isn't here now, because a lot of them were knocked down before my time, was... At the end of this lane, before you get to Brian Green's, roughly at the end of his paddock, where his boundary adjoins with the Sloanes, there was a little farm where the Stegels lived, and there had been a... That farmhouse was knocked down in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
And that was ours. I mean, belonged to the farm, John Middleton Murray, and they decided to knock it down. It was obviously fairly tumble down. But it's the sort of thing that these days you wouldn't. You would, you know, do it up and slog it for £1 million. But in those days, that's not how it went.
Do you remember any celebratory events, festivals or anything in the village?
Community events? I remember the coronation was good fun, yes.
This is Queen Elizabeth II we're talking about.
Yes, yes, Queen Elizabeth, 1953, yes. So there was a fancy dress and a big, big feast and bunting. In fact, I've still got a bit of the bunting because I think John Middleton Murray provided it, I think, or some of it, not all of it, but he got some of it. Yes, we had a lovely time there.
And where would that have taken place?
That was in what was still the school then.
Mm-hmm.
The school was used as a village hall, even though it was a school. That's where everything happened. There used to be socials, which I remember going to one, but we were a bit too young. They were kind of adult entertainment. I think they used to have dancing and people used to sing. I can always remember Connie Bennett. She still lives at Hopton now, and she had a beautiful voice when she was young. I can see her now in a blue taffeta dress singing Bless This House, and I can hear it as well as see her. Yeah, she was a very pretty young woman. Yeah. Other celebrations.
And how often did they have those sort of things, the dances?
I'm not quite sure. Again, Tiddler would probably be a better informant than me on that. I don't think they were every week, but possibly once a month.
Regular
sure.
enough for yeah. you to remember them happening.
Yes, mm. oh yeah, they were. There was usually one in the offing. Yeah, mm. yeah. So, because you know, we had to make our own amusements, to coin a phrase. There's no telly, and that people enjoyed a get together. And at the farm, we always had a New Year's Eve party, which the village was invited to. People from the village who'd worked on the farm were invited to. And again, played games, didn't do dancing, but had people sang songs. Somebody played a piano and different people sang, or I think even recited a poem, or did a party piece anyway.
Sounds a bit like a Cayley.
Yeah, there was a slight Scottish influence because of my parents, but yeah, and Dad loved a song. My mother had a pretty voice too, so yeah. I can't think of any other...
Was there a village fete?
Oh, well, that happened at Lower Lodge. It was more like... Actually, it was so... They were gorgeous because Mary Middleton Murray, John Murray's fourth wife, when he was living here, obviously, she had a lot of flair with things and a lot of leisure, what's more, which is quite important. And they had a beautiful garden, of course, and the little meadow... where, what's the name of the house, Maryfield now is. That was all just one meadow that adjoined. So the fete was more like a garden party because it took place in their garden. There was always a big marquee and all the race, we always had sports. Nearly all the village fetes, because there was so little else to do, a fete practically lasted all day and usually ended up with sports where you got money prizes. My sister and I used to win a lot of races because we were thin and very fast, and B, because we never had any pocket money, so we used to do it for the money.
You had to try extra hard.
No. And in fact, I remember at Blow Norton Fete, old Mr. Crow, whose nickname was Rookie, which is a good one, isn't it, Rookie Crow, saying to my father, "You want to stop your gals winning all our races."
So were they just running races? Or
oh, no, running races, egg and spoon, sack races, three-legged. We were very good at all of them, I have to say, because we used to practice with the Pawsey girls that we played with, Brenda and Phyllis and Carol. Yeah.
Can you remember anything about how the Second World War affected the village or any changes that came as a result of it?
Not really.
Too early?
Apart from the fact that there was a pacifist community there, which there wouldn't have been if there hadn't have been a war. Mm. So, but and obviously some people in the village were away at the war. Tiddler's older brother and some other people that I knew. Later on I knew them, I didn't know them then. But I have to say that we didn't suffer, certainly as children, we weren't aware that being a conscientious objector could be controversial, shall we say. I know there are a few people in the village who, Dad said, never really did take, you know, speak to him. And they weren't uncivil, but they didn't approve, shall we say. But in general, people were very warm and welcoming and friendly. My parents always remember that when they moved in to the village.
So did the community farm start because of the war?
Yes. It's my father had been in the Friends Ambulance Unit, and John Middleton Murray used to speak at Peace Pledge Union conferences, and that's how he met. He wanted to contribute to the war effort, but not by killing people. So they wanted to bring. There were a lot of derelict farms in the 30s. It had been a really bad time, and Lodge Farm was no exception. All the meadows were overgrown, and it was very unproductive. And he brought it. He decided he wanted to build it up, bring it back into proper production, and therefore contribute to the war effort. In that sense, and that's exactly what he did. And I think in the time of Community Farm, it was moved up several grades, so it worked. He succeeded in that. Yeah.
How many people lived on the community at the time?
Well, I've got one of my father's diaries. I think it was the first one. Yes, it was, because he mentioned me, and I was only a baby. He mentioned 30 people. He made a list of their names, and he said that I think it was 30 plus Margaret, who was a baby. So then, but it varied. And in addition, we had German prisoners. We had two German, not our prisoners, you understand, prisoners of war. And Italians were brought, prisoners of war were brought from, I think it was from Bottesdale. There was a camp over there. And they were brought to work on the farm, but Dad used to laugh because he said the Italians didn't work as hard as the Germans, which is, I know, is a cliche and a stereotype. But he went up once. The Italians were meant to be clearing all this ditch. They'd cleared enough to make a fire. One of them had killed a rabbit, and they were sitting round the fire eating the rabbit. And Dad, who knew a bit of several languages, he tried to say to them, what he wanted to say was, no, what was it he said? He said, no futore, no labore, no futore. And they just looked at him and they said, no futore, no labore. So and so he laughed like a drain, and he didn't really make too much of it, but he said, no, the Germans worked a lot harder.
What sort of crops were there on the farms then?
Well, they were all the usual ones, but they did used to do a lot of experimental then, things like flax, which you now see growing quite a lot. Mm. And I used to love that. Well, as you know, it's got beautiful blue flowers, and we also used to like eating the seeds, which we used to eat anything outside. We were dreadful at eating our proper meals, but we would eat anything that was growing. And maize, they grew maize before. There again, that's quite common now. Different root crops, apart from sugar beet, but and potatoes, of course, but only enough potatoes. And not just enough for the farm and to sell as well. Oops.
And around in the other farms in the area, can you remember whether they were
tended to be
cereal crops?
They tended to be the same. They didn't grow the flax and stuff. They tend to grow wheat, barley, sugar beet.
And what sort of animals were kept on the farms then?
Oh, well, that's another huge difference in Thelnetham, is you just don't see animals out in the fields. And almost every farm had a herd of cows. Even small places like Fen Farm at the end of where Brian Green now is had a little herd of cows, which grazed on the water meadows, and hay was cut. And everybody had a, had mixed farm. It was mixed farming in those days, so that the muck from the animals went onto the land, and very few artificial. Well, I don't think any artificial fertilisers were used.
Can you remember anything about the tools and the machinery? And
how that's different? Oh yes, I can remember how I was thinking. I was telling my grandson about hay making because they were hay making, or they were making hay in the. In the glebe land near the church the other day as we walked through, and the machine was just going along moving the rows of cut grass into another row, turning it really. And I said, I can actually remember doing that with long wooden rakes. I said, you wouldn't believe. And I said, that's the same wooden rakes that had been used for centuries before then. And you just don't know when you're a child that you're going to be the last person to use that rake, and I remember seeing them hanging up after we had got tractors and stuff, and the same with the horses. We had horses, I remember the horses, and seeing all their things hung up after they'd gone, never to be used again. We had no idea it was all going to change in 10 years, from the end of the 50s, I think, to the end of the 60s. So the mid-50s to the mid-60s, I'd say, that's the hugest change that's been in the history of agriculture.
So what sort of machinery were the horses pulling in those days?
They pulled the ploughs, they pulled everything. They pulled, I think by the time we had a binder, I can't remember, it probably was pulled by a horse at one stage, but we actually had one tractor and that pulled the binder. So I don't remember people's cutting the corn by hand, like with scythes. I don't know whether Tiddler's father would have done. He'd have cut the corn with a scythe.
And was it baled or was it stooped?
No, it was stooped. Yes, it was stooped. And then the stooks were put in a stack, and then the stacks were thrashed in the winter time. So it's a wonder there was any corn at all. There's so many mice and rats. Because when the thrashing tackle came round in the winter, it would go from farm to farm to thrash, to get the corn out of the ears, whatever the mice had decided they'd leave for it. everything, harrows, ploughs, was all pulled by the
all
horses.
All horse-drawn.
Yeah. And, of course, a lot of walking about for the men who were with the horses.
Can you think about how the fields and the hedgerows in particular have changed? As you mentioned about
certainly can
foraging and
yes, things that I remember are really is the wildflowers. There were so many the verges, all the waysides were covered in flowers because the way that they cut the verges now means that you just have nothing but grass. Because that's what happens if you cut stuff, you get grass. And in those days, we had a road sweeper who lived in the village, and he used to scythe the sort of corners. But because it was flowers, there was no obstruction, the visibility wasn't really affected. I think it's the most short-sighted thing that ever happened was using machinery to cut the verges, but then the flowers also. All the meadows were full of flowers because it was the days before sprays. And the water meadows on the other side, if you go past the church and over the little bridge, just immediately to the right there was a great long strip of water meadows. Well, there's like a reed bed, a plantation, and then there are about three or four water meadows. And I think I carry the picture of the flowers in those meadows with me wherever I go. They're beautiful.
Oh, wonderful.
And the hedges of these were same water meadows were made of, mainly of crab apple because the blossom and the smells. I mean, as children, people think children don't really appreciate stuff like that, but it stayed with me anyway. I wasn't conscious of it, but it has. Yeah.
Are there fewer hedges today?
Many fewer, yeah, yes. Because once there was the technology, you could. Because hedging and ditching was, don't forget, on the farms then, there were, I can't even remember how many. There were a lot of, it was labour intensive, a lot of people working, a lot of handwork, all the hedges had to be cut by hand. So the minute they could get rid of a hedge, and draining, of course, draining the fields, and you could put the ditches, you could do away with ditches even if you drained. So,
did they used to lay the hedges?
No, not here, no, no. But I mean, I've got that map of the farm, and that shows you how many fields there were. Well, now it's about 3 fields, what was Lodge Farm.
Yes. Yeah. And roughly how many fields are there on that map, do you think?
Oh, golly, let's see. I ought to be able to count from here. I think they're all ours. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Oh, there's well over 20.
Yeah. Really?
And it was the same with Cross Green, the hedges there that were taken out. Of course, there was a cricket field. Again, talk to Tiddler about the cricket club and the football club, because he was a member of both. And they were in a field kind of opposite where you live. And that had big oak trees, and it was beautiful. Jack Jones, as I say, he wasn't a brilliant farmer, but he gave the village, or he gave the cricket club a meadow, and he gave the football club a meadow. Well, you couldn't, economically, you could not justify doing that now. But they made full use of it, and people used to gather there on a Sunday afternoon to watch. And the ice cream man used to come, that's why I remember it so well.
You touched on the oak trees. How have the number of trees around here changed?
Hugely, yeah. I mean, everybody says, Thelneatham still is a pretty village, but I suppose it was just paradise in those days in terms of its beauty. There were so many big... On the farm, we had some massive oak trees. Like the one, you know, the veteran oak down near... that Fentrust bought for the village down near past Playford Farm. There were a lot of trees that old in the village. Yeah, down there, the cricket meadow that I just mentioned, for one. And then up on the farm, we had a great big group of them, which were cut down when the electricity came, which I feel sure there would have been a much bigger fuss nowadays.
So they were mainly oaks, were they?
Yeah, oh, we had a lot. There were a lot of big elms as well. Of course, they went, not only were they cut down in the hedge cutting and tree cutting frenzy that I talked about, but also, of course, they died in the disease. But there were some big elms, beautiful big elms.
So when did electricity come to Thelneatham, roughly?
I think it was... My brother was born in 56, and I know my mother got a washing machine. It was the first time she'd ever had one. And I think it came in 55. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that's a matter of record, but I can't... pretty sure. Because at the farm... Again, health and safety would have. I can remember, you know, as 6 years old, I was the oldest, so me and my sister slept in the same room and the same bed, in fact. And I took the candle up to bed, put it beside the bed, and being a naughty girl, I read by the candle. Yeah. Mum would come later and make sure that the candle was out, but you just wouldn't do that, would you? Give a 6-year-old a candle and say, off you go, dear. Especially in a thatched house. But we didn't do anything, you know, we didn't burn in our beds.
Going back to outside with all these trees and hedges, did you collect fruit and nuts, and were you allowed to pick the wildflowers then?
Yes, I had a really good collection of wildflowers, because I just adored them. And I learnt the names. We had an old horseman who taught me some of the names. My parents taught me names. For some reason, I just really liked them. And so I learnt all the names at a very young age. And when I was at the grammar school, we had a wildflower pressing competition. And it's if only I had it now. It was before, I suppose I was about 14, so it was still before we had sprays. So there were wildflowers in that collection that 5 years later weren't there anymore.
Goodness.
And I lent it to somebody, this collection. I know they don't last forever, especially if you haven't, you know, if you just pressed them and stuck them in a book, which I had. I hadn't cellophaned them or anything. But I never got it back, because when Suffolk Wildlife Trust were wanting to take over the fen management, my sister was still in the village, and he wanted to know what wildflower situation was, and Jeannie said, you ought to ask my sister Margaret. So she said to her, have you got your wildflower collection? And I said, oh yes, I lent it to so-and-so when I get it back. Well, the person I lent it to said that I hadn't lent it to her. And there was nothing I could do about it.
No.
That was such a shame. So I had to tell him as best as I could what flowers I remembered. But that was an amazing record, really. Without knowing it, I was actually recording all these flowers that were never going to be seen again.
How much of Thelnetham was woodland?
Actual woodland, more or less as it now is, little bits on the fen and the Black Horse, you know, the woods down the far end. There were some little plantations. They were called plantations. So they had, you know, they were artificial. We had a little one on the farm. There was one over the river where I described the water meadows earlier. And I think there was one of the Reeves' field between Thelnetham and Hinderclay Fen is called Planton Field, so there might have been one there.
You touched on rabbits when you were talking about the Italian prisoners.
Yeah.
Do you remember any other animals and birds?
Funnily enough, it seems to me, maybe I wasn't as bird aware as I was flower aware, but I don't remember seeing things like as commonly as jays and magpies. I mean, we always had the cuckoo. But one thing that we did have that I sorely miss is swallows and house martins in huge numbers at the farm. Because if you have cattle, there's a lot of insects, obviously. There's food for them. If you've got cattle, you've got watering places, because every farm had ponds in the fields for the horses and to drink when they're out working. And down at Cross Green, the hamlet there used to be a great big barn, where the new bench is now, there was an old bench originally. That's why we had a new one put there to replace it. And the swallows and martins, I mean, the air was just thick with them, the sound of them. And the same at the farm, and everywhere there was a little farm with animals. So huge numbers of swallows, house martins, and in the winter time you saw flocks and flocks of lapwings, which you do see a few on the way to Ixworth in the winter, but you see about half a dozen here now.
Where was the barn that you said was at the hamlet?
It was, you know, if you the big conker tree, it was sort of to the back, just behind there. There was another conker tree. I can't quite remember where the other one was, but I know there were. The one that's there now was a youngster and is now a big one. And it was quite a big barn, yeah. But when Aves took over, when Jack Jones died in 57, so did John Middleton Murray. And so Jack Aves modernised. That was the spirit of the times, you know, they didn't need that barn, so they did away with it.
Do you think the shortage of barns now affects the birds that they're
oh absolutely yes
not
because
many, the,
if, they, the if they haven't been taken down, they've been turned into houses, and people have also got fussy. I mean, house martins used to build their nests on the farm on almost every eave of the farm, and yes, they did make a bit of a mess of the windows, but people didn't make such a fuss about it being so tidy. And my mum used to look, because the little windows that you opened, you would be covered in, you know, bird muck. And my mum just used to clean it off when they were left, which is perfectly, why not, you know. So, yeah, people were much less fussy, less suburban.
Did people hunt the animals for food in those days? I mean, you talked about the rabbit, but was hunting...
Not hunting, but people
killing animals
and
for
people
food.
Didn't do, like, you know, when you see these silly people all dressed up in combat dress with shouting at their dogs who are taking no notice of them and that kind of thing going about. People, I mean, an old man that I know used to get the fen shoot, and he would go on the fen because he was hungry. He was very poor, mm. and he used to kill the odd pheasant and rabbits. I'm not sure what else he would have killed. And even, oh, that's another thing there are a lot of, was snipe. Well, now if you see two snipe a year, you know, it's a red letter day.
Were they on the fen?
They were on the fen. Our old horseman used to kill snipe, which is...
for food or for sport?
Yes, yes. Well, and I suppose sport, but it wasn't really done... I think the only person who did it for sport rather than to eat was the vicar, because he, at the time...
There's an irony in that.
Yes, because of course he wasn't hungry. He wasn't doing it because he had to.
So did other people in the village shoot animals for food?
I think probably people used to snare rabbits. Because my sister and I we found snares up the old moat on our farm when we were ploughing about. We found these snares and we dug them up. Oh, that's right, we found them because my sister put her foot in one and she had rubber boots on, which was probably a good thing. And in the end, I had to dig the snare up to get in order to rescue her. These are the sort of things that my mother knew nothing about. We used to get into scrapes. So we went round looking for snares and whenever we found one, we dug it up. So they were common, I think, snares. Yeah.
Do you remember the Little Ouse River as a child?
I certainly do, yes. I can remember it before it was dredged. I think that was the worst thing that ever happened to it. And when people talk about digging it out now, I just think, leave it. Because then it had a sandy, gravelly bottom. And there was a place... it was actually on the river on the border with Blow Norton, where people used to go and swim, and you could paddle without getting muddy. Because once they dredged it, they took that layer of sand and gravel up, which they parked. They put somewhere near where the ford now is, and all the farmers and people had the sand and gravel for paths and things, driveways.
When was that, Margaret?
That was, I think it was about 48. So, yes, I do remember the river. I remember it kind of like before and after. And again, it was a very popular place, boys fishing. I don't know whether adults fished. They probably did, but we always took our jam jars down and the boys had made homemade rods and things. And it was...
What sort of things were in there?
Well, we used to call them tiddlers, so I'm not quite sure what they were. I think there was a mixture of sticklebacks and minnows and usual froggy things. In the 60s, there were koi poo in the river. I remember that, yeah. They were a strange sight.
Did the removal of the sand and gravel affect the plant life there at all?
Well, I can't remember exactly how the plant life... I was more concerned when I was there than swimming in it, or paddling, rather. Couldn't swim, but paddling and picnicking and playing around. It must have changed it somewhat, I suppose. But, yes, it was a shame that it was ever disturbed, I think, because water's got to go somewhere. And you see the system of water meadows and river, it soaks up the water. People think it causes flooding. You know, I think, no, it's like a sponge.
How much flooding was there in Thelmetham, summer and winter?
There was always, in our side of the river, down past the church, we had the meadows opposite the water meadows that I described. Ours weren't quite as wet for some reason, but they always flooded every year, and you just expected it, you know. But you didn't put the cows down there in February because it was... February Fieldike, the months actually kind of went in the traditional way then, and February was usually wet, and so the cows went, we had other meadows, so they went, well, they weren't outside actually in the winter anyway, so it didn't arise.
It wasn't flooded in the summer, even though it was low-lying
no,
land.
No, I don't remember, I don't remember summertime flooding at all. I think there was, later on there was, but I don't think I was here then.
So did you play on the fens as well as...
We played everywhere, yes. Mm. We played mainly on the farm, but we had... My sister had a friend who lived in Fen Oak Tree Farm, is that it's called? I think, yeah. There was a big family there, and she played with the daughter, and I used to go there, and we went on the fen, and... I remember being told, and I'm still aware of it to this day, to make sure you keep to the paths, because it'll, if you get out, you know, if you wander off, you'll get sucked down. And possibly that was true. It's possible that there might be spots that are where the floating bit is a bit weak and you might sink, but I don't think I ever heard of it happening. But yes, we loved the... it was, again, the water meadows down there, which the Little Ouse Headwaters Project has just taken over, John Webb's meadows. They were... It was like paradise. That's all I can say. I mean, it sounds as if I'm really soppy, but it was so beautiful. And, yeah, I mean, somebody like Tidler, an old farmhand, he will tell you how beautiful it was. Mm. So, you know, it's not just me because I'm female and middle class. It's people actually did, I think, they've...
Did you collect things off the fen?
No, I don't think we collected stuff. We ate whatever was there. There's wild raspberries. They're still there, wild raspberries. We ate, in the way that we did. Whenever we came across anything, we ate it, if it was edible, yeah. Crab apples and things. Yuck, yeah.
And how has the fen changed since then?
Well, the fen, of course, was much wetter then because there hadn't been... Anglia Water used to pump water from the river further up, which had an adverse effect on Old Fen. It didn't affect this one because this one isn't as close. Middle Fen here outside Willow House isn't as near to the river. So that didn't help. And we had all the drought years from the mid-70s to... Because I wasn't living here then, but from the mid-70s till the mid-90s, really, it was incredibly dry. So that didn't help from one end. And the Anglia Water stopped pumping. I can't remember. I think it was while I was... We just about moved here again in the early 90s. And Suffolk Wildlife Trust have been doing a really good job of... reclaiming it, because when it dried out, trees and scrub grew, and the old traditional not quite pre-war but just after war of cutting the sedge off the fen and grazing the edges stopped because people no longer needed to, and so that also encouraged trees and stuff, which in turn led to more drying out because their roots would... If you walk on the fen now, you can see the level of some of the trees. You can see where their roots start, and it's way above the actual ground, so you can tell that the water level has dropped considerably. But the flower populations are coming back, and they are noticeably coming back, yeah. So, I record them every... Well, I record them in the Fen Trust report, but obviously the Suffolk Wildlife Trust record them more scientifically than I do. And yeah.
Do you remember wood being collected for firewood off the fens?
Well, I don't personally, because I wasn't sort of old enough to take part in it, but Tidler, again, he used to go, and he actually says, although now it's collected for firewood, and a little was then, he said actually in the old days people tended to go down and cut wood to make fence posts for their chicken runs, or even wood to kind of build a hen house, or bean poles for their run of beans. And it wasn't so much used for firewood, because it's not actually that brilliant for firewood, because it's either willow or alder, both of which burn badly when wet. If you keep them a year, they burn fine, but they're not like oak, not like apple. They burn very quickly, so it's not ideal.
So where were people getting their firewood from in those days?
Good question. Generally, I suppose, there, as I say, there were a lot of big trees, so there, quite often trees would fall down and people would be like vultures after them. We had a saw, a circular saw on the farm that was run by a tractor latterly, and that was quite a job in the winter. Was any branches that had fallen off trees or any trees that had fallen down were dragged into the yard and sawn up, and other people just used, you know, their two-man saw or just a single hand saw.
Do you remember people digging peat from the fens?
No, that stopped. I don't think anybody in the village would remember that. Possibly not. I don't think they would. No. That must have gone back. Because there wouldn't have been the trees there anyway, so I suppose peat would have been the fuel. Yeah.
Mm. And do you remember people setting fire to the fens at all?
They did that a couple of times in the 50s. Because, as I say, when they stopped it being cut, when it was regularly cut by everybody in the village, sedge was used for thatching. Some of it, I presume, was used for hay, and some of it was grazed, the dry bits. Once they stopped doing that, it was fired, not that often, and not particularly effective either. Mm.
So would that have been from about the 50s?
That was sometime in the 50s, mm. Yes. I couldn't put a date on it.
And was this the reed and the sedge sold, or did people just cut it who needed it?
No, just cut it who needed it. Even when we had our house thatched in 90, whenever it was, 8, down near the, you know, sort of right near the house bit, you could see the layer of sedge still, so... Mm-hmm. And our barns at the farm were, if it wasn't actually used for the actual thatch, it was used as a layer, as a sort of a liner. And then wheat straw would be put on top.
Right.
But I remember that, you know, the barn at the Evergreen Oak where Kate Robinson lives. I can remember when we were children, I can remember that was thatched in sedge. I remember, or reed, you would say, but with the heads on.
Yes.
The furry heads, yeah.
Did they plough up any of the wet areas that were drained? What happened to them?
Well, yes, I mean, the water meadows I described earlier were ploughed up. They're all part of that field now. And if you ever notice that they get wet in the winter, there's water standing there. That's because they should be water meadows, and that's their purpose. But, you know, that's rather controversial matter in this village.
And do you think that's connected to the deterioration of the snipe population? I mean, you mentioned that they were quite common.
Yes, I think the habitat changed. So, you know, certainly in those dry periods.
Do you see snipe on the fen now?
Yes, I saw two or three. I've always seen one, and woodcock. They are there, the woodcock particularly. But there aren't flocks of snipe. I mean, there used to be flocks, and there aren't. Or a flock, I don't know how many flocks. Certainly one.
Right. Do you remember bitterns there at all?
No, I don't. I'm not sure if they ever were, but I have a funny memory, and I don't know whether it's something that I wished, because I had a little observer bird book as well as my observer flower book, and I used to be fascinated by the picture in it of the bittern, and I used to imagine that I heard it when I was up at the farm. I heard it booming, but I'm not sure I think that was more wishful thinking. I may be wrong. There may have been a bittern on the fen that I didn't know about, and so it might not have been imaginary.
Mm. So are there any other things about the fen now that really strike you as lovely or different?
Well, I can't remember seeing so many marsh orchids as we have out here on Middle Fen since the Suffolk Wildlife Trust have taken over there. And this year was particularly beautiful. But on the other hand, I can remember when I was a child... there were far more marsh hellebarines, which are a kind of white, orchidy, slightly looking, orchidy looking flower, and a lot more ragged robin, because there weren't any muntjac. Now, muntjac eat a lot of vegetation, as you probably know if you've got a garden. And they do eat a lot of the flowers on the fen. But yeah, the fen was always a big part of any... That's what I find a bit sad, that you don't see children playing on the fen. In fact, you don't see children playing outside much, except in their gardens. And we were always trailing about the place. Of course, I know the roads were safe, so... Mm-hmm. So we could just go around, because people did tend to go around in groups. We were our little group. There were about five or six of us girls, and boys went around in groups.
But you don't find children playing out too far from home for all sorts of reasons.
Exactly.
Today.
No, you can see. You know, you understand it perfectly, but it's still a bit of a shame, really, because you have your own. Your child's world lasts longer, I think, if you have that kind of sort of independence. I mean, I have very few memories of my parents when we were children. I can remember my mother's voice calling us in at the end of a summer day, you know, for bedtime. But I know we lived in a community, so, as I said before, we weren't subject to the nuclear family thing. But I think my friends would have said the same, and they children's lives were separate somehow.
Is there anything else about the fen that we haven't covered that you think ought to be recorded?
I can't think of anything. I know people, not just children, but Tiddler's family used to walk across the fen, right across to Hinderclay, on a Sunday afternoon, and lots of people did that and used to meet people, you know, from Hinderclay and other villages.
How important was the church in people's lives then?
Oh, it was much more important than it is now, I think, and had a bigger congregation, because although we didn't have a big house, we had the Sawbridge family, who I'm sure you'll have heard of, where it really was left over from them, because he was like the big house, as well as being the clergyman. He was the nearest we had to a lord of the manor. And people felt they had to go to church. I'm not saying that a lot of them weren't committed Christians, but there was also this feeling that you had to go, which, of course, has died out completely. There was always a hard core of elderly ladies... on bikes, usually. Tiddler's mum was one. Actually, she wasn't that elderly then. I sang in the choir for a bit. We had a choir of four. But when I was a child, there was a big choir. I can remember that, and remember some of the men with proper gowns and things. When my sister and I and two others were in it, it was just a token choir, really.
It sounds as though there were a lot more children in the village than there are today.
There certainly were. And things like the harvest vegetable, that's what my nephew used to call it. Harvest festival, was absolutely magic. As I say, we had no electricity, so it was candlelit. And in those days, everybody, it was produce, nothing but produce. And the apple, you know, the shine of the apples in the candlelight, and the marrows and the bread and the corn and the carrots and the swedes, everything, piles of potatoes. It was so pretty, so beautiful, really moving. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Margaret. Okay. You've covered an enormous spectrum of information about Thelnetham, and it's been very interesting to talk to you. Thank you very much.
I hope I haven't rambled too much.
Not at all. It's been very interesting. Thank you.
Okay.